Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and no Christine this week. Health things getting in the way for Christine a little bit. Joining us this week, Teresa Vinette. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. How are you?
I'm going to be okay. Now, all right, you got it right out of the gate here. We got to get this straightened out. So we have Teresa Vinette, then yes. We have the Kitten Stitcher, and then we have Shakespeare's Peddler.
Right.
Okay, I don't get it.
So here's what happened. Here's how this all happened. So way back in 1997, I opened a needlework business online. I had had a website for a few years. I was doing web design, like really early days of the internet, back in, you know, like 94-ish or so. And so just kind of as a hobby, I was making a needlework website, just articles about needlework and stitching and book reviews and things like that. And then I was teaching at the college level for a little while and then decided that I didn't really like, I had two little kids. I kind of wanted to be home with them. And so I started a home business and I named it Shakespeare's Peddler, which is named after a character in Shakespeare's A Winter's Tale. He was a peddler that went town to town selling needlework supplies and mirrors and laces and things to the ladies of the villages. So I had that business for a long, long time, 17, 18 years. And then I took a few years off and did a few other, you know, different things. And then on YouTube, I started an account and I wanted to make a comment on somebody's video one day. And I don't even remember what it was. And they were like, well, you got to have an account if you want to comment. So I was like, okay, I don't know what I'll be the Kitten Stitcher. And so it was, I didn't think about it, but 5 seconds. And I've done a lot of fostering of kittens and puppies too, with the local animal shelter. And so when I started my YouTube channel, I just was the Kitten Stitcher just because that was the, you know, place that I had already put my name on. And then I used to be at shakespearespeddler.com. And when I went back to try to get that domain again, a Japanese company, I think, had pounced on my URL that I had had for such a long time. And they sell like ginkgo biloba now or something. And it's like not in English and it's not related at all to literature or needlework or anything. And I think they do that. They wait for like somebody to abandon a domain and then jump on it. So I couldn't get it back. So I'm at kittenstitcher.com, but I'm still Shakespeare's Peddler.
Okay. All right. That makes some sense to me.
Yeah, I know.
I was trying to sort all that out and it just wasn't coming together. Yeah. Yeah, those domains, boy, you get one you like, you got to hang on to it. It's just
It was a mistake, but what can you do? Yeah. It's not, it's all right.
Yeah, and it's so hard to get the ones you want anymore because everything's taken. That's like we use WeTalk Fiber for Fiber Talk because everything that started with fiber was used. Yeah, it's.
I think Fiber Talk is good, though. I think that was a good one. Don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're happy with the thing, but you know, we just couldn't get the URL to go with it. So it's, you know, we talk fiber. I mean, that's just the world today, boy. Back in the day when you could pretty much pick your
I
URL.
I know. Yeah. I used to sometimes when the internet was real new, just like try words out and see if anybody had gotten to it yet, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one time I was like, I wonder if anybody has stupid.com. And they did.
They did.
And, yeah, if you go to stupid.com, it's actually this company that sells like novelty, you know, like fake barf and stuff that. And so once in a while, I still go check them out and they're still there. So at stupid.com.
Hey, yep. You get one like that, you hang right on, you know.
You do, because there's no going back. There's only one stupid. There's only one stupid.com. Right. Otherwise, you got to go into like stupid.edu or stupid.gov and...
stupid.edu, now that's a nice little, if you think about niche. That one, that'd be good. That'd be a good one to have. Yeah.
It might be. It's probably taken.
Probably. Yeah. Because some other warped mind thought of it. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So, okay. So now I understand how we do the Shakespeare's and the Kitten Stitcher. Mm-hmm. And I also now understand why when I watch your FlossTube videos, there's kittens all over the back of the background.
I'm a crazy cat lady. And you know, I never had a cat until like 8 years ago. And then we got one and it was just a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a crazy cat lady and it's what it is. It's what it is.
Yep. No, we used to have cats and you really can't have just one. You got to have two.
Well, yeah. Or seven.
Yeah. And then that's where the line either gets drawn or disappears. Yes.
Well, and part of what it was with us is just, we started fostering kittens for the shelter and the local animal shelter. You know, we would take them in when they were, I've bottle fed day old kittens before. And, we've done hundreds. I've literally had hundreds of kittens go through this house. And so I feel like, you know, with as many as I kept, I did pretty well because there were hundreds that I gave back to the shelter. So.
Well, they're good. So we won't see, we won't see you on the news getting hauled off for
a house full
of cats that,
No. You end up keeping those that, like, you know, hard to place kind of, you know, where it's like, okay, it's you or it's nobody kind of thing, or, you know, so,
God bless them. Just as long as we don't have to see your neighbor getting interviewed. Well, she was a normal person. She seemed nice.
So normal, but yeah.
But I guess it turns out she was just nuts.
She was a crazy cat lady.
So, okay. So you're stitching. Did you follow the usual path, learn when you were a kid from grandma or mother, or how did you get?
Well, I mean, you know, like my great grandma, she could tat, which is super cool. And I never learned how to tat. She just was too, like, kind of old and crabby by the time I was interested to teach me. And then my grandma, unfortunately, she did a lot of embroidery and crochet and sewing, but she passed away when I was 10. So it was just kind of like right that year that I started stitching. I went to 4-H camp. And they had this really cool, like, canteen that you could buy, you know, Bazooka, bubblegum, and Jolly Ranchers and things. And they had some little craft kits, and I bought a little needlepoint kit. And it didn't come with any instructions. It was a chart, threads, a piece of canvas, and it was not a printed canvas. It was counted. And so I was like, I can figure this out. And so I didn't know how to do it, so I threaded the needle. And I started, like, right in the corner of the fabric. You know what I mean? Because I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, right up at the edge, yeah.
And then I'd go, okay, I'm going to do this in rows. And so I would make, like, three cream stitches and then take my needle off and just let the cream dangle and then do the two red stitches and then take my needle off and let the red thread dangle and grab the cream again and bring it over. Like, I didn't know you could – I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I liked it. You know what I mean? Like, even though I was doing it horribly wrong, it was still fun. And so, you know, I got a few needlework kits from Santa Claus that I did, and I took a class at school because this was, let's see, like 1982, 83, you know, cross-stitching was really big. Remember, it used to be like you couldn't go anywhere without seeing cross-stitch kits. Like, they were at the mall and the gas station practically.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just kind of took off from there. I was doing, you know, all the Precious Moments, and I did an
Emmett. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was the thing. It was the cross-stitch shop, and it was the Precious Moments and little teddy bears and all that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I did, like, an Emmett Kelly clown on oatmeal, like, floba or something like that for my mom. And yeah, so it just, and I enjoyed it all through high school, and I just really always liked to stitch. It's just fun.
So that's the one that intrigues me, is the people who keep doing it through high school, because, you know, there's a tough time to be doing something like needlework, you know?
Yeah. Well, and see, I was on the speech and debate team, and so I would take a project with me, and we'd be in the van going places, and I'd be stitching a Precious Moments in the van. But I don't know. I mean, I guess people just accepted it because it wasn't embarrassing at all. It was just something I enjoyed doing, and
they were probably jealous because you had something productive to do.
I don't think too many people were jealous of me in high school. Oh, Lordy.
Oh, let's think they were.
They might have been. Yeah.
They were doing homework. You were stitching, you know?
You know, like, I didn't get asked to junior prom, which was just devastating because, you know, you just are like, oh, nobody likes me enough to take me to a dance. And my dad just was like, you're just intimidating. Those boys are just intimidated by you. It's like, I don't think that's probably the right word, but we'll take that as it is.
Yeah, there's one. The guys are always afraid to ask, and the girls are, frustrated when they aren't asked. Yeah, there's one of those
I know.
Social things, yes.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I never went to dances, nope.
I loved to dance, but... Oh. Just never got asked. So I waited for Sadie Hawkins when I had permission to ask a boy to go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That was my day.
Yeah. So then college, do the college thing?
Yeah, so I went to school. I graduated in 3 years, which was dumb. Don't ever do that. That was not. I thought I could save all this money, and I did, but it was that was rough.
Yeah, I'll and then say.
At one point I was switching schools, and I had like 42 credits at one time, which was just insanity.
Oh no!
And so then I worked, you know, for a couple of years in a frame shop, and then I went back to grad school and got another degree in mass communication. And yeah, so I did college, and my husband teaches now. He's been a teacher forever at the university. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. That's nice.
But, you know, I wish I'd taken a few business classes or a few art classes. I end up, and yeah. You know, you sometimes in life doing something that you're like, oh, I didn't know what I was.
Well, yeah, be. Yeah. That's the same here. I mean, you know, my degree was in biology and chemistry, and I don't do either one of those. And
yeah,
you know, teaching, and now I put together magazines. So yeah, happens.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I think anytime you go to school, you use what you learn. You know what I mean? Like I definitely use the skills that I learned in college.
Yeah.
Every day.
Oh yeah. That's the thing is it really doesn't matter. In most instances, doesn't matter what the subject matter is. It's what you learn to get there.
Right.
Turns it. Yep. Yeah.
I kind of believe in life. Like every step leads you to where you are today. You know what I mean? So that they might not have all been happy, fun steps, but they all got you to today.
Yes.
And so, You can't ever go back and say like, oh, I wish I hadn't done this or I wish I'd done this, because then you wouldn't be where you are. You know what I mean?
Right. Different path then. Yes.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Yep. And that's, you know, doing needlework in college, because I've said this before, being a guy in a guy dorm, you know, I'd have gotten run out of town, but, as I look back, especially mm-hmm. for me, science, you know, all the time, what a nice mental break that would have been.
I know
to have that, and yeah, but not to be so.
Well, I remember sitting in the dorm watching, you know, just TV in the commons area and working on a P. Buckley Moss cross stitch piece. You know, it just, yep. It's relaxing. It's so good for you.
Sure. Clear your head. You bet.
It does. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people think, oh, well, I like to stitch, but they don't really think about like, why do you like to stitch? And I think it's very meditative in a way. You know what I mean? Like you're in your head and you're doing something kind of repetitive over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah, there's,
it's
yeah,
very
that rhythm, that rhythm, yeah, that just, totally. Yeah, yeah, kind of lulls you. Yes.
Because we should not like doing what we do. Like there's no good reason to like making a million X's. You know what I mean? Like that's
isn't that
not
true?
Normal.
Yeah.
That's not normal. But I don't know. For some of us, I guess, you know, if anybody ever asked me what my favorite letter of the alphabet was, I'd have to say the letter X, because I make it so many times, yep. every week.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Because if an alien drops in,
yeah,
you know, the first reaction, what is wrong with you? Yeah, yeah, what do you? Yeah, yeah. The string and this cloth, and you're just making X's time
know,
after time.
I had a customer contacted me once many years ago, and she had a funny story to tell where her daughter brought a boy over for dinner, and they had dinner and it was very nice and whatever. And then they left. And then the daughter later said that the boy, when they got out to the car, said, "Is your mom okay?" And she said, "Yeah, what do you mean?" And he was like, "Well, so there's nothing wrong with her?" And she said, "No." And he said, "Why is she infatuated with the alphabet?" Because he looked all over her walls and it was like all these samplers everywhere with the ABCs. And he thought for some reason she had like some mental fixation with the alphabet or something. he had never seen them before. So,
Yep. You can see how, yeah. Yeah. What's wrong with that?
I mean, if you had never seen it, you would think it was crazy.
Right. Especially, but, you know, people who have a lot of those samplers, it's like, didn't you get it the first 30 times?
Exactly. So there's nothing wrong with you, right?
Yeah, no.
There's probably something wrong with us, though.
Well, yeah, we all have a little hitch here and there. Yeah,
I know. Yeah.
No doubt about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So designing, when does that come in? Do you start, is it just Evolve? Because you say you didn't take any art classes.
I didn't. You know, I was one of those girls that my mom and dad were like, well, you got to get into a good university. And so you got to take all the math and all the history and all the science. And so then really once I got done with grade school, I didn't take any more art classes, even though, you know, I had really enjoyed it before. And then a friend of mine, Sue, and I started Raise the Roof Designs back in like 2003, I think. But you know, just kind of just to try it, and so we had a lot of success with that. And then I just, you know, was interested in samplers, and so I kind of broke off and did my own thing under Shakespeare's Peddler. And then I had been thinking I would just do reproductions, but then I tried my hand at designing a sampler myself, and it was the A Weary World sampler was the name of it, and it did really well, like better than the reproductions. And so then I do both. I reproduce and then I design my own samplers.
Yeah, well, that's and on your website. Yeah, it's a excellent mix of both. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you do reproductions, do you buy the samplers or?
I do. Yeah, it's not super kosher to. It gets tricky because, you know, there's not really copyright on these pieces of art because they're so old. But it has happened before in the industry where, you know, a sampler has shown up on a website and a designer has reproduced that sampler with nobody's permission, and then someone who is a designer has kind of turned around and bought that thinking they would reproduce it only to find out someone else already did it.
Yeah.
You can kind of step on people's toes that way. And so, yeah, there are any that I've reproduced, and you of course can approach like a museum, and a lot of times, you know, you can make a donation to help them with, you know, what they do there, and they'll have kind of, you know, rules and ideas on how they want you to do the reproduction. But it's just as easy to find a 200-year-old sampler and just reproduce it yourself. I mean, I think people don't realize when I started, I remember I was at work and I was taking a break and I looked on eBay. I was like, I wonder if there are antique samplers on eBay. And I found one, and it was the first one that I ever reproduced. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to buy it because there aren't any samplers. Like, this is a rare, rare thing. And and they're obviously, I mean, they're not super, super common, but there's a lot of samplers. There's a lot of old samplers. And I mean, it's just infinite, almost, the number of samplers that could be reproduced.
Yeah, that's the part. When we started this podcast, I mean, I'm a needle pointer, and mm-hmm. I learned needlepoint first, and then during the cross stitch heyday, you know, I got into some cross stitch, but I've always been a needle pointer. And it was weird to me because a couple of times I bought when that sampler quarterly, whatever that was
sampler
called.
Sampler Antique Needlework Quarterly, sure.
Yeah, I actually have a couple copies I bought just to mm-hmm. see what that was all about, but mm-hmm. I didn't get it. You know, right. I didn't understand what it was.
Right.
And then when we started doing this podcast and you know, looking for guests and started running into these mm-hmm. sampler reproduction people. Mm-hmm. And then once you start to get oriented, what an incredibly huge community of people.
Yeah.
All over the world that do these samplers. And,
right.
You know, I just never imagined how, number one, how many people were involved, but number two, from that period in time, 16, 17, 1800s, how many right. samplers are available? It just seems like at some point we'd run number. Out.
You would think, but you just, you know, you just don't. And they're all so different. Everyone has its own personality, and every girl or little boy had their own personality and put their own thing into it. And it's, I mean, there are so many different types of samplers too, different countries, different styles, different sizes, different colors, different techniques. And, you know, it's funny because I think like you and I could look at a sampler and we say, oh, like that one looks like it's from 1820 to 1840. Isn't that cool? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then we might see a piece of needlework hanging in someone's house and go, oh my gosh, that sampler is so 1990. But then, you know what I mean? Like in 200 years, yeah. people will be able to identify like, oh yeah, that sampler's from the probably late 1900s. You know what I'm saying? Like
right.
it's,
right.
we're part of history now. We don't, you know, I don't think people think of it that way.
Yeah.
But we haven't stopped. Like the history is still being made with the needlework. And, you know, it used to be like something that professionals did. And then it got to where children were doing it and, you know, learning marking skills or you know, showing off their education. And then, you know, sometime in 200 years, they'll be like, and then, you know, like in the 1900s and 2000s, women did it as a, you know, women and men did it as a leisure activity. You know what I mean? Like we are part right. of, we're someone's history right now. I hope
yeah.
we are anyway.
Yeah.
I hope we are.
Well, I hope so too. And certainly 200 years from now, based on the number of people doing samplers, there's not going to be any shortage.
Well, I mean, and I think the thing that'll be confusing is just that it's like we're reproducing all these samplers with these names and dates on them that are not accurate.
Right.
Or you know what I mean? Like we're reproducing. But I think that's part of the history, that they'll look at it and say, you know, this was a reproduction. They'll understand that. You know what I mean? Especially since we're keeping records, you know, video records and written records of what it is that we're doing.
Yeah, we've been having discussions off and on here in recent weeks about how to, you know, how much information to put on your sampler when you're done, so that that person 200 years ago can at least have a clue to what's done.
Yeah.
And the more I've thought about it, and the more we've discussed it, the more important I think it is to include that in some way.
Yeah. And really, somewhere on the fabric, I think, because because things get unframed all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, integrate it right in. Well, Gene Lee suggested that you do it in the margin that would get folded under for the framing. So that, stitched right in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, if you think about it, in 200 years, you know, there's kind of a leapfrog thing that happens where, this is a reproduction of something that was even 200 years older than that.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, but, you know, they'll have things to say about the fibers we were using and the color of the fabric and the count of the fabric, just like we do for these girls.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, it's cool. It's cool.
Well, yeah, and that'll be the other part. Hey, three of the same, but all done differently. Yeah. Why is that? Yep.
Right. Well, and that we're designing, there are a lot of people that design things that are new, but they're made to look old.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's a pretend sampler. So it's not even a reproduction. It's a, you know, a sampler with a date on it from the 1800s with a girl who's just completely made up.
Right. Well, and on top of that, you know, your designs as an example of samplers created now that we just think about as an original design, something fun to stitch, but effectively we're doing the same thing that those little girls did. It's just that we're older.
I know. We have Ot-Lites and Q-snaps and, you know, plentiful needles.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know how they did what they did. Those girls were amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't either. Cause, and obviously, what they used was quality stuff to have held up all these years.
Oh my gosh, totally. Yeah. Totally. But even like right now I'm working on a little reproduction marking sampler that I'm doing as a reproduction, and clearly she was using the scraps, you know, like the thread that she had, you know, like she ran out at some point and it's like, well, I got this other color, it doesn't match at all, but I'm going to finish this letter with this other color. You know, so I think when you reproduce a sampler, you learn so much about the child that did it. You know what I mean? You can see like, how did she handle mistakes? You know, was she tidy? What does her back look like? And what does that say about her? And did she, sometimes you'll get one where it's like they throw in kind of an impetuous flash of red somewhere that it doesn't belong. What happened that day? Right. Yeah. That you can just see them. Did they pull their stitches really tight, or, you know, just the quality of their work and color choices. And like, you know, one of the reproductions I did, it was mainly, you know, pretty put together. Cause a lot of times the teachers would design them, but then you'll see this little girl come through where it's like, well, that's a horse. And she threw a mane on there, and the mane is all crazy, you know, where she just was like, well, this horse needs a mane. And then they just kind of throw in all these crazy stitches to signify a mane. And that's the child coming through, you know, which I think is so neat.
Right. Oh yeah. That's what I've started to see and what little exposure I've had to samplers, but already I've started to see where the child shows up. And to me, that's the personality. That's the real fun. Because at some point, these 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, they're still kids. And there's no way day after day they have the kind of discipline it takes to do it just so.
No.
You know, that kid has to rise up every now and then and just say, I'm putting this in this way and I don't care.
Well, and think about a border, like how much skill and strength and stamina it takes to complete a border. You know how like when you finish a border and it matches and you're like, yes, my border totally matched. Like, this little kid had to make sure that they, you know, did everything just right all the way around the sampler. It's really one of the biggest elements of a sampler is the border. We don't really think of it that way because it's just a thin band.
Right.
But it's huge to have a border go all the way around.
Yeah.
And for them to get through that, you know, without mistakes is pretty amazing. And right. So they had to just been climbing the walls at some point, probably. I really enjoy stitching borders where the, you know, like the flowers are different. You know what I mean? Or the, with fine needle and thread, Brenda Gervais, when she designs little samplers, she will have the border be different on like all four sides. And I love that because I get so bored with a border where it's like you're making 50 of the same flower over right. and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't noticed that about Brenda. I'll have to look at her, thing. That's because yeah, it is a boredom thing. And in the little that I've done, I tend to kind of keep the border going along with the rest of it just to, because I learned that from Nicola, the sampler that I'm about halfway done on. Mm-hmm. Had an alphabet and numbers that went all the way across, and it's quite
right.
wide. And I just pounded my way through those. I've got, you know,
that's right. I remember hearing you talk about that. Right.
And then she said, no, don't do that. Just, you know, go do something else and then come back. And so that changed it for me is, I want to do yellow. I'm going to go do this thing down here and mm-hmm. Different color, different shape, something. Yeah. Anything. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I talk about a lot in my videos is that the whole idea of like needlework without rules, that I think a lot of times we impose rules on ourselves where, you know, like you said, I'm going to get this alphabet done and you're not right. even having fun anymore, but you're
right.
just like, I'm going to get it done. This is a leisure activity. You know what I mean? And I think we're just like, well, you know, people wouldn't, you know, think it was correct if I did it this way. And it's like, well, it's just needlework. And if you look at the samplers that these little girls did that are so amazing, they are full of mistakes and crazy, you know, just kind of deviations of what they were working on. And so it's first and foremost, needlework should be fun. And if you're not having fun, you need to switch projects or you need to, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Well, see that, and that's a fundamental problem that I have is my makeup just does, it really leads me to suck the fun out of things.
You know, you're a scientist, right?
It really does. And I do have to stop and kind of scold myself frequently. No, you're supposed to enjoy this. If this part isn't fun, go do something else, or you've got 10 projects going, go pick up another one.
Exactly.
And quit, quit fighting through it. You know, that's the flag for me anymore. If I feel like I'm fighting through something, then I need to stop. I need to break it down over the course of several days and do, all right, I'm going to go finish this half tomorrow until I get through this and get over the hump because, I'll do that. I'll just, you know, bear down and pound my way through. And it does. It takes the fun out of it. And then you get done and it's like, oh, geez, now I got to go on.
I know. Well, and see, and that's, I think, what makes you want to put it down. And you know what I mean? Like you're not having fun anymore. So then all of a sudden stitching isn't fun anymore.
Right.
And you have to think about like, why is it that I'm not, am I having fun? And if I'm not having fun, why am I not having fun? And it's like, if you have a project that you, our tastes change. You know what I mean? I don't know how far your whips or your UFOs go back. Sometimes you look at something
You'll never know.
You know, like you look at something you started 15 years ago and you're like, I don't even like that anymore. You don't have to finish it.
Right.
You totally don't. And rehome it or, you know, hang on to it for posterity. I don't know. Have you ever been over to Europe at all? Like over to England?
Yeah.
The Victoria and Albert Museum has a wonderful collection of samplers and a lot of them are not finished and they're in a museum.
No.
So I kind of feel like that gives us all hope that like if you don't finish things, like it still could end up in a museum somewhere.
Yep. No, I agree with that. And I do have several that are partially finished, not just samplers, but all kinds of needlework.
Yeah.
But, you know, when people say, you know, I've lost my momentum, I've lost my enthusiasm for it, and then they'll just stop stitching. And to me, no, don't do that. Go get a hardanger chart or try a little needlepoint ornament or something. Try something that is completely outside of your comfort zone and challenge yourself a little bit work with different threads, work with a canvas instead of a piece of linen, and just find another channel and just some diversion. I think that's rather than just stop and say, oh, maybe someday. No, try. There's just so many options anymore.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And even if you just like cross stitching, there are so many styles.
Yes.
You know, and so like if you're used to doing samplers, try something that looks realistic or try something that's kind of whimsical and silly. Or, you know, if you're used to doing big things, try something little.
Yeah.
It just sometimes it just takes a little, you know, something to break up the monotony.
And that's the other part of that is we all, if we've done anything, all have accumulated enough thread. And, and you know, and just about any designer has right. some small free thing that you can download.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you can go anywhere and just get some simple little thing and use some of the thread you have, even if the colors don't go together, just for the thrill of stitching it.
Yeah.
And, just try something different.
Now, do you love starting pieces? Is it like, is that a thrill? Like where you're like, oh yeah, this is like, I got all my new supplies.
No.
Cause a lot of stitchers, it's like all about the start,
right.
You know, it's right. like they just love.
Yes. And I think some of that is the shopping part too.
Yeah.
Shopping for the pieces and evaluating the colors and changing the threads and those kinds of things. But
yeah, there's like all this potential.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't.
I really like that last like 10th or, you know what I mean? Where you're kind of rounding the corner and you can see home and you're almost done and you're like, oh yeah, this is amazing.
That's the part for me, I think. Right there. It's like a horse race, you know, around the last turn. And
Yeah.
And you can feel it.
Yes. And then you put that last stitch in and your heart like just kind of lifts.
Yep.
Where
yep.
you're like, that's it. That was the last one. And you're done and you can like just enjoy it and
on to
the next thing. That's exciting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You do feel a little adrenaline and you start stitching on it more and more each day. And yeah. And. You got to bring that one in. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
And then do you finish it or put it in a drawer?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was in the framing industry for such a long time. It was my first job. I worked at a place called The Great Frame Up. Do you remember those at all?
Oh, yeah. That whole chain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was my first job. I was 15 years old. And so I frame a lot, you know, just because I did it for years and years. But man, the way we used to frame needlework, we used to use this terrible brown tape.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. And we would tape all this, you know, cross-stitch on Aida to these big boards. And it was not. Yeah. I mean, that's just how we did things back then. But
right.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore. I don't use the tape. But
That was at one time. That was big business. Those stores were quite busy. They were everywhere and they were quite busy.
Yeah. It was, you know, and it's. It's a tricky thing because like my job as a 15 or 16 year old was to help people learn how to picture frame. And so I would get these adults, you know, and like one time this guy came in and he was really drunk and he tried to like build a metal frame in the vise with nails. Like it was terrible. it was hard, but, it was a really cool concept. I'm sure that insurance has got to be a, you know what I mean? That there's got to be liability because you're, even though they weren't using power tools, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love the idea that you have the space that people can come in and build a frame and stretch their needlework and stuff. But I don't know, maybe people are too busy these days to do that anymore.
Yeah. I think a lot of that stuff. Yeah. People just, if someone else will do it and make it go away, fine. And you know, some needleworkers will argue, I don't want to spend time framing or finishing because that's time I could be stitching. And
right.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got a few tutorials up on my YouTube channel with like how to go about doing picture framing at your house. Mm-hmm. You know, like how to stretch your needlework and how to pick out a frame and how to measure. And I've had a good number of people contact me and people make videos about like, look at what I framed all by myself. And, you know, when you think about it, like stretching is kind of expensive to have a piece stretched.
Yeah.
And it's totally doable, and it's so liberating to know how to do it, and it's more money for stash is kind of how I feel. It's not rocket science.
Right, yeah, yeah. Is lacing, I've never, lacing is one thing I want to try. Is that, have you done that? Is that difficult?
Yeah, I'm not very good at it. I don't ever really like the way lacing turns out. I pin and then I leave the pins in, and you can get stainless steel or nickel pins. And I've never really had a problem with that, like getting rusty or, so I just pin into acid free foam core and leave it. But yeah, I mean, there are tutorials on YouTube on how to lace. And it's, again, not rocket science. To me, it's trickier to get it really straight. I like it really straight.
Yeah.
You know, like I follow the thread all along the side and it's all got to match up. Because once you learn how to stretch and you get your own particular set of like ideals, you start to look at what other people have stretched for you at the frame shops and you're like, oh dear, this is not straight at all. Because they're not needle workers, you know, so they look at it differently than we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and isn't that one of the things, like if you're going to send out and have your needlework either finished into a pillow or something or framed,
right,
you really want, after you put all that time in, someone who understands needlework.
Yeah.
Not someone who just does pictures all day.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think a lot of people now, it's like all I have is Hobby Lobby or Michaels. And, you know, I've had good experiences at those places, but I love going to like the little independent framing shops. You just get such great service.
Yeah.
I feel like, and they, I don't know. I always support the little frame shop. Cause they, you know, it seems like they always do a great job. And
oh yeah. I mean, anything I have framed, I have at my local needlework store because you know, the lady there understands the owner and the lady who does the framing work and the lacing and everything, they understand what they're dealing with. And so I know that when I bring it home, that what's underneath that glass and inside that frame is going to last forever. It's not glued or taped or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you hear like, I mean, I was in framing long enough that you hear horror stories like, you know, people getting their artwork home, you know, and finding out that there's a big coffee ring on it, like that somebody in the frame shop had set a coffee cup on it. Or this one lady stitched, you remember the praying hands cross stitch piece where it's just like the prayer hands or whatever. And this lady had taken it to a local frame place and they had set a piece of mat board down on top of her needlework that had double stick tape on the bottom of it without realizing it. Ugh. And then they picked that board up and they cut it in half on the mat cutter.
Oh.
And they cut her needlework in half.
Oh.
And she absolutely had a cow.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously, because it was ruined. It was it was cut in half down the hands. Like the hands were not praying anymore. They were separate hands. And
yeah,
so
there's no saving that. No.
She made them pay someone to restitch it for her.
Oh, wow.
And then she brought it to the frame shop that I worked at and we helped her frame it. But yeah.
Now there's a dilemma. There's a question right there.
I know it is.
Is it the same if you stitch it and it gets ruined? You know, and then someone replaces it. Is it the same?
No, I mean, because then the thing is, if she made it as a gift, it probably wouldn't matter. But if I don't remember if it was something she stitched for herself or as a gift. But if it was, I wouldn't even want to look at it. I don't think in my house because it would just be like such a bitter memory.
Right. Oh yeah, it'd be ruined for me. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so would you? So all right, if you're in that position, would you go stitch it again, or would you just chuck the idea?
Oh, how do you feel about stitching the same thing twice? I don't like to.
Yeah, me neither.
Because to me, it's like the surprise. Like once I start a piece, I don't like to look at the cover at all. Like I like it to be kind of a surprise. Like what color did they use here, and what color comes next? And
okay,
you know what I mean. Like it's kind of like putting a puzzle together.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think I, because it was then if you stitch it the second time, it's like all the surprises are gone.
Yes, to me that's just work then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus you would just have just bitter ashes in your mouth the whole time. Man. You would just be like, stupid frame shot.
Yeah, and about the first time you had to frog a section, that would really set you off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they didn't mean to. Obviously, they didn't want to do that. It happened, but it's just a bad situation.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's just it. Yeah, but I don't think I would. I think I'd go find something else and use it in its place. Yeah.
We had another lady come in one time, and the frame shop she had taken hers to had lost her Teresa Wentzler. Like she stitched a Teresa Wensler. I don't remember which one, and they couldn't find it.
They lost it.
They probably threw it away, or they just, it was just gone.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
Oh.
That's a bad day at work.
Yeah,
real bad day.
Yeah, and then you got to make that phone call.
Oh, my gosh.
Or get the call. When is mine going to be done?
Never.
Yeah.
Half past never.
Yep. Right after you stitch
the
it again.
The 14th of never.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Oh, man. Yeah, and that's, you know, of course, that's always the thing, too, turning your needlework over to someone else to handle.
Yeah.
You really got it. There's a trust element there.
Totally, yeah. And it's a financial commitment, too. I mean, it's not inexpensive, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's very true, yeah. Yeah, because that easily can be as much as you spent on the piece.
Yeah. I think one of the things people should know, though, when they're taking their piece in is that, like, make sure to get what you want. Like, I think sometimes you can go to a frame shop and they're like, they try to lead you to, like, the frame they like better or the, you know. And I think you're the one that has to look at it for the next 40 years or whatever. So just, you know, even if they say, well, I think this frame is too modern or this frame is too old fashioned or whatever, you get what you want. You're the customer.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. And if they don't have the frame that just makes your heart sing, and then try somebody else. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yep. Or come back another time. Or
same for the mats. Same for everything. Yeah. You know, whether you have a mat or not, how thick it is, whether it's doubled, right. All those things. Yeah. You gotta be happy with it. Cause
I don't even do mats anymore. Do you do mats?
Yeah. Everything I've had framed, I have a mat. Yeah.
I always just pick a really wide frame.
Oh.
Because I kind of found that, you know, being in framing such a long time that I would frame and mat something, and you kind of end up picking out colors that are popular at that time for the mat. And then sometimes it can look real dated, you know what I mean? Like 25 years down the road. But you can always get the mats changed too, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess if you don't get a mat, then your piece is smaller, so the framing is cheaper and you can hang more on your wall.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like just fill it up. Just fill it up.
There you go. Yep. Yeah, I don't know. Of course, most of everything that's hanging in the house that I've stitched and has been framed, just about all of them, I just say to my wife, here, whatever.
Oh, you let her go?
She's
nice.
She's got a much better eye for it, and she knows where it's going to fit in the house.
Yeah.
And so, a lot of times I'll just say, and even at the store, she'll say, what do you think, this or this? And I'll say, well, this, but I really don't care. Because, she just has a good eye for it. So,
yeah,
I let it.
It was always my experience that with men stitchers, that they're just really, really good stitchers. You know, just because I've helped a good number of people frame their own pieces and had people bring stuff in. And you don't get as many men for sure. But the ones that do bring theirs in, it's like impeccable. Like,
why is that? I've heard that a million times. Why is that?
I don't know. And it's just like the crosses, the X's are perfect. The backs are amazing. The tension is perfect. And, you know, it used to be that men were the needleworkers, you know, back in jolly old England or whatever. They were, you know, they would do the embroidery for the king and everything. And I don't know. It must be, you know, because I don't know. I mean, are men and women different? I think they are a little bit. I think so. So maybe men are just, I don't know. But it's not to say, like, I've seen beautiful work done by women, too. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I could find you 100 women within 10 miles of me right now who could outstitch me 6 ways to Sunday. But
I don't know that I've really ever seen a man bring in a piece where I'm like, this isn't that good. You know? Like,
see, that's so weird. That's so weird.
I don't know.
I don't know why that is. And maybe it's because there's so few men that there's a certain type of male that does it in to begin with.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. Maybe there are men that are cross stitching that we don't know about and they never frame anything and they're terrible stitchers. Like we just never see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I fret and worry and work to make things as perfect as I can get them.
Yeah.
I'll admit there are times when, all right, that's pretty close. I'm moving on. But
yeah. Are you a frogger? Do you frog stuff? Like if you're like,
yeah.
I don't frog. It's full steam ahead.
Oh, yeah. I tear stuff out. I've torn out massive amounts.
Oh, honey.
Oh, yeah. I can't stand it. I just can't stand it.
It bugs you too much.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'll tear it out, throw away huge lengths of thread. Yeah, whatever. I don't care.
Oh.
I just enjoy
I like forward stitching. I hate backward stitching. And so I get inspired by these little girls who just left all their mistakes in. And I feel like if it was good enough for them, it's good enough for me.
Yeah. No, I have to. And, I mean, yeah, it's been a point of discussion in psychoanalysis many times on this podcast, but it really is. I just can't do it. And, the reproduction sampler that I'm working on, have been working on, and I'll get going, and these are all the same, and I'll stitch them, and then realize three of them are not the same. I'll tear them all out. I'll just tear them all out. Yeah, I can't. It has to be the way it says on the chart. I can't. I just can't let that go because
bless
I wanted to. It's just the way it is. I can't help it.
Yeah, so, I mean you gotta be you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, see, and here's the thing. 200 years from now, they're going to look at my sampler and your sampler, and they're going to say, this guy was particular. He didn't like mistakes. His sampler is perfect. And this lady, she's got problems all over the place. And that tells about our personality. You know what I mean? Without us even meaning to. And it's just like what I was saying earlier about the little girls with their samplers. You can tell a lot about who they were by the way they stitched. It's cool. I think it's neat that we put ourselves, the world would be pretty boring if we were all the same.
So true. Yeah. Yeah. No, I just wondered that many times, why is it that you always hear that about men?
I don't know.
And I couldn't give you an answer as a male stitcher. I could not give you an answer.
Well, I mean, I think you're onto something that it may be a particular, since there aren't as many men that do it, it may be a particular type of guy.
Yeah.
That is drawn to stitching for some reason. I mean, there's something very mathematical, really, about stitching. It's a lot of counting, and it's a grid, and, it's following directions, and you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But it's artistic, too.
Yeah.
It kind of uses both sides of your brain in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the fun things. I mean, I have no artistic talent, in my view, to speak of.
Well, I think you must, though. You must.
Well, maybe
because
I do.
You're drawn to beautiful things. You know what I mean? Like, that speaks to you.
Yeah, I guess. But I enjoy watching it unfold. And I think that's why I tend to do charted things more, is I love watching it unfold out of a blank space.
Right, and right.
That's, to me, that's fun to sit back and go, whoa, this is really coming together.
Right.
And I got to do a painted canvas someday. I did them back when they were kits. That's how I learned needlepoint was, dimension kits and stuff. But to do one today, a hand painted one, and with all the threads and no wool, no basket weave, those kinds of things. Just to experience that, I really need to do it. But
you should.
I like
you were saying, you try something new.
Yeah. And I have a couple.
You know what I bought at Hobby Lobby the other day? I bought a latch hook kit. You remember latch hook?
Oh, yeah. You can still buy them?
Yeah. And so it's kind of a cool one. I'm trying to remember what company it is. It's like Dimensions or somebody has got these. And they're kind of, if you look at the latch hook section in Hobby Lobby or Michaels, a lot of it is like the same exact stuff as it was in the 80s. But they have this stuff that's just like slightly more updated with a little bit cooler colors. They've got like some dragonflies. And the one I got is koi fish.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of cool. And so I haven't started it yet, but I bought a latch hook. And I'm like, you know what? I haven't done this since like 1981.
Well, that was all the craze. Everybody was doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. I did this huge Holly Hobby latch hook rug when I was
like 10 years old. Of course it was Holly Hobby.
Of course it was. And it was enormous. It was probably like 2.5 feet by 3.5 feet. And it came as a kit, and it had a pink background, but they didn't send enough pink thread. So about halfway up, I switched to blue. And because I was fancy, I made a rainbow in the sky. It was pretty. It was so pretty. I don't know what happened to that. I'm sure my mom probably donated it somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you where she donated it at some point.
Right straight to the Garbaggio.
Yeah, that one. That one. Yeah. I wonder, over time, how many dimension kits have been sold?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's got to be a frightening number.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Because, yeah, it was for me, it was Lee Ward's. Because yep. I learned needlepoint from an old girlfriend in college, actually.
Oh, the truth comes out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been told before, so, you know. but it was a full-blown needlepoint shop, you know, with painted canvases and you know, all the wools and all that stuff. But then when I moved to Illinois, then there was this business called Lee Ward's, which was and I just remember going in there. It was just like 3 miles down the road for me, which was dangerous in its own right, and you know, just racks and racks and racks of dimension kits of all makes and models and kinds. And you know, you think if they had that many and still people know what dimension kits are today,
right,
how many billions of them have
Well, and remember all the Cruel kits?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where it was like, you know, like hot air balloons and zebras and cats and all kinds of. We used to frame that stuff and people would do the Cruel knot on a frame. And then they would like stitch angrily. So like their tension was horrifying. And you would try to like unmangle these horrible. Oh, my gosh. They would just be so wadded up and you could never really get all the wrinkles out.
Yeah. No, that as a matter of fact, the stockings I've done for my wife and our two kids, the cruel one, I'm almost sure was a kit that I got at Lee Ward's, cruel kit, you know, printed on there, stamped on there, and then you stitched it, and it was the only first time I'd ever done it, and even now when that comes out at Christmas time, I didn't do too bad here.
I know. I keep thinking Cruel is going to make a comeback.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Latchhook will make a comeback. I'm not sure.
You're going to lead the charge.
I am. I'm going to get my Hobby Lobby, my Holly Hobby. You can find them on eBay, these old, you know, like 1980s Latchhook kits. My brother had a Stormtrooper, a Latchhook Stormtrooper.
There we go.
With a burgundy background. It was very nice.
But yeah, everybody, that was just a crazy thing. I mean, just everybody was doing those things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, but I think a lot of that was, you know, that was a real mindless.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those rhythm things. And
well, and I think, you know, I'm just so overjoyed that like people are stitching and having fun with it. And I think it's a real comfort thing. You know what I mean? I think the world can seem so scary and terrible some days. And I think that when you sit in your chair with your Ottlite over your shoulder and your magnifiers on and your pretty thread, that there's just something so like simply lovely about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Very comforting. And then for us all on FlossTube to be encouraging each other and on Instagram and Facebook, I just think it's just a nice, like comforting community thing that's going on right now.
Oh yeah, and the internet has been discussed more than once. Is you're not alone, and even if you're alone, you're not alone, and you don't have just one or two stitching friends. You have just as many as you want.
Exactly.
And an easy way to share it, you know, virtually all of us have a phone with a video function on it.
Right.
And you can share what you're doing and get feedback. Get encouragement, all those things, and you know, for a lot of us, actually, I think all of us, just for somebody to give you a thumbs up,
is a little
shot in the arm,
It is. It's nice, and it's you know, what a kind, supportive community. I think it's really great.
Right. Well, and I think that is the key, is because if you look at the internet. And whether it's blogs or Facebook or any of those things, there's so much negativity.
But in the
stitching world, it really is a nice, pleasant place of upbeat, positive people who are there helping each other and encouraging each other.
Yeah, cheering each other on.
It's such a, you know, I have changed my Facebook friends.
Yeah.
And anymore, it's just about, 80-85% stitchers. Well, and there was a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
I got really tired of all the garbage.
Yeah.
And I thought, why am I going on Facebook and scrolling past all this garbage? And, you know, even if you don't read it, it still hits you. Why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah.
Jettison these people and bring in people who are going to be positive and creative and
supportive.
And at least if I'm going to scroll through, it's upbeat stuff. I'm glad I did, because it's a much more pleasant experience when I sit down with the iPad and take 10 minutes to just scroll through and see what people are doing. And it's really, to me, that's the way the internet should be for the most part.
I think it's really cool when the internet is us teaching each other. You know what I mean? Us. Because it used to be, I try to tell my kids like what it was like when you used to just wonder things. You remember that? Like back in the 70s, you would just be like, I wonder how tall, I'm trying to think, like Gabe Kaplan is.
Right.
And you would just have to wonder because there was no way to find anything out. And now, it's like, how do you make like a Montenegrin cross, or how do I, finish my needlepoint canvas, and it's like, you just go look it up. And it's us like, here's what I know. I'm going to put it online in a blog or on Facebook or on YouTube. And hopefully, this helps other people.
Yes.
And there are some, negative Nellies out there who will thumbs down or I don't know if do you ever watch any like woodworking videos on YouTube?
No.
Oh my Lord.
Well, I bet that's a snooty crowd.
A little bit. It's lots of thumbs down and like, well, I think you should have used a blah, blah, blah.
If you'd held the grain just two more degrees this way.
Yeah, I sure wouldn't have, like you ruined it. But
that wood will never be the same.
I think it's cool when we teach each other, and help each other. And I always try in my videos, if I do tutorials, say, this is how I do it. This isn't necessarily the right way to do it. It's not the wrong way to do it. This is just how I do it. And if this helps you, find your way to do something.
Right.
Then I did my job.
Yeah.
Because we're all going to do what we do.
Right.
And I think sometimes stitchers can feel real intimidated, by people who've maybe been doing it longer, that it's like, well, I don't know any of the answers. And I'm sure I'm doing this wrong. You're not. Right. You're doing things the way you're doing them, and it's right for you right now. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. 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 And you will trip over people who, stitching police type people.
Mm-hmm, I know.
They exist everywhere. But
the whole, like, you got to wear gloves to stitch a sampler and, wash your hands. And last night, I'm sitting here working on this reproduction sampler eating buttered popcorn.
No, that's too far.
That is how I roll. And someday they're going to like analyze my little samplers. They're going to be like, she clearly liked buttered popcorn. She clearly did. We found popcorn DNA in this sampler.
I'm Teresa and I'm leaving my mark.
I'm leaving my mark with butter and salt.
All right. Yeah. Oh yeah. That'll be the collection. That'll be how they'll collect Teresa samplers. Yes.
Yeah, because they identify all these samplers by like, well, this was this school because this was their motif. Right. Well, it's going to be like, well, this was the Cheetos stitcher.
Right.
She liked her flaming hot Cheetos. She's left her mark.
Yeah, and that all the products in Cheetos will last forever. So.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It won't decay one iota. No. All right, we're running out of time, but I do want to make sure that we talk about your samplers yesterday and today, zine.
Yeah,
talk about that.
Okay, so we were talking just earlier.
And you have
about
30 samplers. Seconds to no,
really?
No,
okay, because here I go.
Got all the time in the world.
Okay, so Sampler and Antique Needlework Quarterly was a great, great, great magazine, and I have just about all of them. And I like the paper copies, I'm gonna say, rather than I know you can get them on DVD or whatever, and I like. Being able to take a bath and read a sampler magazine, because I just do. And they stopped production a couple of years ago. And I remember recently I was like, it's so sad that they don't do it anymore, because people are still stitching samplers like maniacs. And there's so much cool stuff going on right now with reproductions, and there's still all this history. Somebody really ought to make a magazine about samplers again. And then 30 seconds later, I was like, Teresa, you have a master's degree in mass communication, specifically print journalism. Like, you could do it. And so I'm putting the finishing touches on issue number one, samplers yesterday and today. And the whole idea is, like I talked about earlier, that there's a history, but that we're also making history. So like one of the sections that I have is stitchers can submit a picture of themselves with a sampler they've stitched, right? So that there'll be pictures in the magazine of sampler stitchers with their samplers, because wouldn't it be cool if we had these photographs of these little girls with the samplers they stitched?
Oh yeah, wouldn't it? Yeah.
And you know, I think a lot of times stitchers are like, oh, I'm not attractive, or you know what? People are hard on themselves. And it's like, no, I want to see your beautiful face with your beautiful sampler. And so Paulette Stewart actually is the first from Plum Street Samplers is the first interview. And she's got a little design she's contributed to that'll be in there. But it'll be reproductions and book reviews and product reviews. And I actually have had people start to submit articles that they've written too. And I kind of want it to be a kind of a community collaboration. But the whole idea is that sampler history didn't stop at 1883. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's today. We're making sampler history today.
Yes.
It's something that's happening now. So that's kind of the whole idea of samplers yesterday and today, because it's, I think the today is equally important.
Well, it should be recorded. Yes.
Totally. And if we don't record it now, then someone's going to have to try to piece it together and they're going to get all the details wrong. You know, if they're trying to do it 100 years from now, they're not going to know.
Yeah.
And so, so it's going to be available through my website only as a download. That way it can be as long as I want it to be. There's no advertising. And there can be lots and lots of pictures because there's no printing costs. And so people can either read it on their device, on their computer or their iPad or their phone, or they can print it out if they want to, or they can just print certain pages. Like they could just print the charts out of it if they want to, or you know what I'm saying? And so
right.
I see it as just kind of a very free, I don't know if people know what a zine is. I probably should have explained what a zine is. A zine is a magazine that is self-published. And so historically a zine used to be like a photocopied affair where, you know, somebody would write some articles and draw some pictures and things, and they would just make photocopies and either give it out or sell it to other people. And it was just a very kind of independent way to get information out there. And so that's what this is going to be. And we're going to see how it goes. But I'm really excited about it.
Terrific. So quarterly, twice?
I think quarterly is what I'm going to shoot for. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I do encourage people to contact me if they have like ideas for articles, or if they have like a question, or if they want to contribute. I've got a couple of people that design or reproduce that are working on things that they want to contribute to the magazine, to future issues in terms of. So it's not just going to be articles. There will be I've got a craft project in this one that's really cool. And so it's just kind of a mix of various and sundry things. So it's kind of like Sampler and Antique Needlework Quarterly, but also, what do I want to say? Like maybe less. There will be some academic elements to it, but it's also going to be friendly, not that they weren't friendly. I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's going to be kind of laid back in a way where it's like, hey, this is what's going on now. This is what we're doing. This is what we enjoy. Here's something that's silly. Here's something that's serious. You know what I mean? That it's just going to be kind of a more varied mix of things.
Well, what I'm hearing, and I like it if I'm hearing it accurately, is more than just another magazine full of projects.
Right. But also not just a magazine full of articles. You know what I mean?
Right.
That it's
like a mix, a good mix. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause, and like I said, I want other people to participate because I don't have all the answers myself. And so, I've already got other, you know, designers and things kind of lined up to be in future issues and things. And so I want it to be about our sampler designers today also, you know, like Paulette Stewart is a wonderful sampler designer. And someday, you know, in 200 years, they're going to look back and say, well, this was a Plum Street Samplers design. And this, you know, this was the designer and here's what she was like. And I think it's important that we grab history right now as it's happening.
Well, I think it's fantastic. So when's the first one?
It'll be about 2 weeks or so. It'll be ready. And like I said, it's just going to be available as a download through my website. There'll be a fee. I haven't decided on how much yet. It's going to be very affordable. And so just available as a download, not something that people can like get a subscription to or anything. But the nice thing is that you can read it and then not waste any paper. You know what I mean? You just read it on your computer if you want, or print the pages you want and whatever.
Great. Yes. Okay. So then that's terrific, because this that'll come out right about, sounds like right about the time that we post this podcast. So good deal.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, yeah. That sounds exciting to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. Thank you. It's fun. And it's fun to use my degree for a minute.
I know every day what it takes to put together a good magazine. So, you know, more power to you. It's
yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, I told you the hour would fly by, and it has.
Did. What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Happens every time.
I know. Yep. But when you talk about needlework, it's just like, you just want to keep talking.
Exactly. And we could, but we got to cut it off.
Aw.
Sorry.
That's fine.
All right, Teresa. Thanks. It's been a real treat.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.